Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another MCU for Dummies. I am dummy number one, Ken. That is dummy number two, Lou. And we are burdened with glorious purpose to discuss the fourth episode of the Loki series on Disney Plus, an absolute bananas 60 minutes, Lou. We've had every character that we've known just got erased. And is now in this weird, like maybe almost dead situation. We've just met Richard E. Grant. He's wearing pajamas. There's a crocodile. There's a child. And then there's a black Loki as well. It is all chaos. Nobody knows where Mobius is. He may be dead. I wouldn't bet on it. He's probably on a jet ski somewhere. Lou, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, this was a crazy episode. I really liked it. I think most people that saw this episode liked it. You know how much of an IMDb fan I am.
You are.
Episode
4.
You are
an international man of databases.
A big fan of the IMDb. Episode 4 at Nexus event with almost 7,000 views at this point, reviews at a 9.5 rating. So yeah. The fans have spoken. I would agree that it's probably the best one.
By far.
I can easily play some devil's advocate about why some folks might not. This was a big turning point of the series, in my opinion, because we'll get to it in a couple of minutes, but we lost the antagonist that they've been building up to, and now we're kind of lost.
Yeah.
And you're either you're in like one of two teams here. So if you think that Loki is a great show, you still are holding on to the fact that there's much more story to tell and the potential hope of another figure coming into the fold that could be the antagonist. If you think the show sucks, you are really deep on the Timekeepers being the bad guys and are now totally just feel disenfranchised because that carpet's been pulled underneath you.
Yeah, Lou, let's start there. I know we have an agenda, but you know I'm a crazy person. And I want to veer it, right? You mentioned we lost our antagonist. We're putting a pin in what we believe to be our initial antagonist, which were the variant Loki, right? And then we lost her and she became kind of a friend to our Loki and maybe also a lover, which is a little strange. I've never loved myself hard enough to ruin a timeline, okay? That's number one. And maybe we can all take a lesson from that. Maybe a little bit more self-love, folks. Okay. That's number one. We lost her. She's now a friend. Number two, the Timekeepers, right? We knew they were up to something. We find out they're like Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Chuck E. Cheese animatronics playing the banjo while you're eating the pizza at your friend's or not your friend's seventh birthday party. Put a pin in that. There's a pin in them. Every single one of these episodes, Lou, has gotten a phenomenal rating on IMDb. They got a great Rotten Tomatoes. People rave about it. There's obviously your Uncle Chets of the world who hate that there's a chance that a man might kiss another man or that, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have to talk about them. We don't need to give them airtime. They get enough of airtime. Just turn on your Fox channel. Why, Lou, do you think so many folks are having a hard time saying that while the individual critical acclaim per episode has been so good, why do you think so many folks are having a hard time conflating that into saying that the entire series has been good? Because I've seen some of your feedback, and I think it's quite interesting.
What do you mean? I
saw some of your tweets about so some folks are saying Loki's just there's something missing, right? There's we're so deep into it and I'm still kind of just a little bit lost, still grasping at straws. Right. And I saw your comments about if this was a movie, would you have the same thought? So take me through your thinking there, because I think it actually is a really good point.
Oh yeah, I agree. So the serialization that, you know, Dace Johnson from Inverse brought into the podcast when we interviewed them a couple episodes ago, I think was this very clear picture of like the difference between movie format versus TV show format. And while the TV show format for these Disney shows offers a much richer experience because we're able to like dive into these characters a little deeper, we are losing the structure that I think many people have become accustomed to regarding superhero movies. And with superhero movies, you know, right off the bat, you're mainly introduced to the protagonist, usually the antagonist at first. You see the bad guy or girl, and then it enters the protagonist, and then you start getting the story, and then you figure out how these two mesh together. But with a TV show, especially one that's like playing with time and a bit deceptive, you got to either have faith in the entire storyline or you got to really latch onto something there. So I think we've lost a little bit of the structure that fans have become accustomed to with normal MCU movies. But I still think that there's a lot to be held here. In that tweet, I was just being a devil's advocate and expressing the opinions that I've seen from a couple of people. I think the show is amazing. I think each episode has been great with the exception of episode three, but I'll side with you. I think episode three was the prologue to the back half of the series. But to be honest, I mean, I still struggle to understand the true format of this Loki show, but I know that each episode is so good, and I'll make the case that it's because of the characters and the fact that there's just like a handful of characters that they have very quickly told us why they're relevant, their motives, some backstory, and they make sense. And I think in the final fight scene in episode four, when everybody comes together, there was so many conflicting measures in that room, but you understood where everybody was coming from. And that's incredible from just three episodes in which one of them was just two characters and the rest of them have just kind of been some snippets. So I hope that answers your question, but I still struggle to pick up on the side of why people don't like this show. And again, just to summarize, I would boil it down to maybe they're tied to the movie format of MCU up to this date.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think all of your points are valid. And I think they're mostly fascinating because we've come to a point in storytelling in the MCU that is so much deeper than beat 'em up bad guy, right? People loved the first Avengers movie because of that orgasm shot with all six of them standing in the middle of New York while they were fighting aliens, right? Like, that's what they loved about it. They loved Captain America Winter Soldier because it was kind of like this sleuthy, detective-y movie with Black Widow and Captain America, right? And then they loved the fight scenes, right? Like, you think about these, the movies that so many fans of the MCU have just come to say are the best, right? The cream of the crop, right? Which ones tell the best stories, right? I would argue that the best stories so far in the MCU have come from all three of these TV shows. And I think it's because this TV format gives you so many more avenues to tell stories, make real connections, you know, lift the stakes of the characters, lift their actions into real, whatever I'm trying to say, but it creates a real bond, right? I mean, like, and all of these characters that they're focusing on the TV slate so far have been kind of these secondary characters, right? I mean, we just had our first big six, right? With Black Widow and Iron Man and Captain America, Hawkeye, Hulk and Thor, right? We know all them. They're our favorites. We're starting to build up some other folks, Wanda, Vision, Falcon, you know, Bucky, and now Loki. And those characters have kind of played these B roles, and they are doing what a 23 movie saga did in 12 weeks on a TV show. Because when you see Loki talking to Sylvie about maybe his love for her or himself or however you want to describe that. And you see, right, you see Falcon talking in the middle of the street about the life of Black folks in America, or you see Wanda crying in the middle of an empty lot where she didn't get to build her house with her robot boyfriend. Like, right, like, those are real moments. Did you get any of those in the 23 movie saga outside of Infinity War and Endgame?
Not necessarily, but I don't think they're structured to be that way.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like that first slate, right? Your Infinity saga was built around superhero movies, what we know now as superhero movies. Like you said, you introduce protagonist, you introduce antagonist, they have their first fight, then nobody wins or loses, then stuff happens in the middle, there's an internal conflict with the protagonist, and then he resolves or she resolves that battle, and then they have an end
rises
battle.
Rises to the occasion and overcomes.
Right. Yada, yada, yada. Happy, happy, happy.
Yeah.
Right, and that happened maybe 18 times of the first 23 movies. right? Like Infinity War maybe doesn't count, or right? Like you can pluck out examples, right? Of where those things, maybe that's not the exact formula they used, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's really like 22 of those first 23 movies were just that, because I can't think of another one that wasn't, other than Infinity War.
With this sort of format, I mean, I get where you're coming from, but I also think that it's like, if you're not taking it for what it is and you already accept that this is going to be something that you're going to enjoy because you just are a fan of the franchise, then you're going to have a hard time like backing yourself into a corner of why you like this or don't like this. Because Wanda, I think in the first couple of episodes, I mean, I did a rewatch where like I watched everything within a day and a half once I finished the first rewatch. So on my second rewatch, I watched everything in like one sitting, basically one of the two sittings. And it was a much different experience when you can see everything together, and it made more sense. And it was so much more enjoyable than like watching it piecemeal. That was just my personal opinion, because I really didn't click with Wanda until the middle and then the end. Falcon and the Winter Soldier was very challenging, but I mean, I watched the Easter egg videos afterwards all in a row, so that kind of helps too.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things, and we can have this full discourse later at a later time when there's more shows and maybe Loki's over. But I really think this format is, like we said, and we've said it before, it is just changing the game of how we look at these characters. They're actually building people out of these characters. Stuff that we loved about Avengers Endgame, right? Like we were all sad about loving somebody 3000, right? Like we were all sad and when Tony passed, and we were all super happy that Cap got to have his dance with Peggy, right? And they built that over 23 movies over a decade, right? Yeah. I was sad at the end of WandaVision, right? Which took 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, they're just changing the game about these characters in particular, because they need to raise their stakes. Like we've talked about, can anything ever be as good as the Infinity Saga? It's really hard. It's going to be really hard. You can't do that for the first time ever again. So they've got to raise their own stakes and come get it. Okay, we got off topic. Yeah. I apologize.
I'll take that last 10 minutes as just playing devil's advocate for why people might not like Loki, because I think the consensus is that most people do like the show. And maybe there's a couple of...
Although, Lou, I got to be honest with you, man. I was watching some recaps on YouTube of episode 3, Lamentous One. And I don't know what happened. I must have clicked on the wrong link. And I got into this weird YouTube deep hole about Loki and identity politics and why it's ruining the nation. So just be careful, folks, when you're out there, okay? I haven't gotten my big wooden queue in the mail yet, probably because the mailman can't find my house, because nobody believes that I actually live here. Everybody keeps calling me and says the address doesn't exist. I'm here. I'm in it, okay? It's got walls. It's got lights and water and everything. I'm in it. I digress. Loki episode 4. Nexus events. Chaos ensues.
Yeah.
We're not going to go through the episode one by one. You probably just watched it. You know what happened. You're going to listen to somebody way smarter than us give a recap. Folks, if we've learned anything about the MCU for Dummies, is that these two dummies cannot give a recap, okay, to save anybody's life. So we are going to skip the recap, okay? We're going to skip it. Read the Cliff Notes, if you must, on Wikipedia. Or watch the show. That might be fun. I would suggest that. Lou and I instead are going to take a step back and level set where our folks are at the end of episode 4. We've heard so much about these timekeepers, Lou. What we learned yesterday, if you're listening on Thursday, we're recording on Wednesday night. They are nothing. They are animatronic, Chuck E. Cheese, whatever. Banana split movie, animatronics who are no good, nothing burgers. The two on the bottom, I couldn't understand a fucking word they said. I had to turn on subtitles. I had to pause, I had to rewind, and I had to put on subtitles, because I don't know what voice modulator they decided would be hilarious to use in the Loki editing room, but they were wrong. Okay, it was not funny. It was just dumb.
You know, they sounded like the Gungans from Star Wars, where he's like,
yes. I couldn't understand a word.
And Jar Jar Binks has to translate for them. That's what they sounded like.
It was terrible. They also couldn't understand crazy. A word.
So right now we're going to talk about the Timekeepers. And yes. I put out this tweet, MCU for Dummies, go follow us. And When they first came up, like in the first scene when Renslayer goes down and they're just sitting there, I was like, that doesn't look right. But I also was like, oh shit, they just showed us the timekeepers. Like, I thought yeah, there'd be a bigger buildup. But I something felt weird. And I don't want to be that guy that's like 2020, but I truly am being honest here that something looked weird from the start.
Yeah.
So what did you think about the great unveil?
I thought it was interesting because you're right. It felt out of time. It didn't feel normal. It felt like a weird beat in their storytelling, if that's what they were going to do. And it just didn't track. So I was a little skeptical going in, and I was like, I don't know. I mean, maybe it kind of gives you like this Wizard of Oz thing, you know, because I don't know. It just didn't feel right. You're right. It something felt off about it. And when they first got in there and the room was all cloudy and like, you could kind of see them hovering in the background and they're CGI, right? There's no problem with that. They do a lot of stuff CG in the Marvel world, obviously, because, you know, they're on different planets and shit, which we can't do practically. So like but it just didn't feel right. Like, it just didn't look right. And, you know, once we got in there and they started talking, that's when I was like, my brain's still on the skeptic side, but that's when I also was like, oh, this might be fucking gigantic, right? Like, this might be a huge moment in where Marvel's headed. And instead, my skeptic's brain turned out to be right. Sylvie throws a sword, chops off the main man's head, falls to the ground, sparking up wires and shit. What was your, like, were you surprised? Like, I know we were skeptical, but were you surprised at all that it turned out to just be a nothing burger?
Yeah, it was the Mandarin all over again, like Iron Man 3. The very final moments of this episode, I was like very aware that I was grabbing onto the side of the chair. It was a very tense.
Yes.
Ever since B-15 walked into the room and threw Sylvie the sword,
oh, yeah.
The knife. That was a that whole like segment was a very good piece of television.
Yeah.
And
let's talk
know...
about B-15, Lou.
Okay. Well, do we have anything else for the timekeepers? I mean, so,
I think they mesh, right? So we don't have to throw the timekeepers away. B-15 learns in this episode, she's struggling after the enchantment from Sylvie. She's struggling with her mind to kind of set things straight. What's going on? I was a person before this. I had a family. I have memories. Sylvie showed me all this. And she is the one who puts the kibosh on the timekeepers, right? Shows up while they're in the timekeeper room, I guess, and throws Sylvie the knife, sword, whatever the heck it is, blade. And that's when the shit goes down. I wouldn't expect her to be done in the series.
Well, we don't know what happened to her. She started fighting.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It looked like she like dropped on the floor. And
I don't know where the hell she went.
We don't know where she was because she probably would have been an asset. I mean, she could have been watching.
Well, yeah, it was 2-on-9, so it would have been definitely a little helpful.
Yeah, so she could have been watching Renslayer and all of this, but did you feel like something was taken away because they didn't show you the flashback of what she saw?
Yes.
We're kind of like, so in this scene, we're like outside of the, so Sylvie brings, B-15 approaches Sylvie, who's held captive, and basically says, show me what I'm missing. And this is all after Mobius is like, oh, yeah, Loki said that the TVA is lying to us. Haha. He doesn't come all across to believe this yet, but B-15's already had that experience in the Roxxon apocalypse where she was enchanted by Sylvie. So she already knows there's something off, and she seems to be the first domino to fall here within the TVA. And then Sylvie brings her to Roxxon basically because that's the only place that she can hide out in, which is the apocalypse, because it will create a Nexus event. Nexus event, I feel like we got a much more clarity on like what that actually entails.
Yeah.
We can get to that in a couple seconds. But then they're just standing outside the Roxxon building that we saw in episode 2 where it's just pouring rain, and they just stand there with Sylvie enchanting B-15, and B-15 all of a sudden has her come to Jesus moment. And I just felt like it was weird because C-20, like the scene with C-20, showed you them getting margaritas. They showed you different restaurants. It was just like odd that they wouldn't like go back into any sort of story at all. Like it could have told you a lot. She literally could have been from any point in time. And they
Lou, I might say
took that moment away.
I might say, and this is a first one. You can mark it down, put it on your timesheet, Lou, on your post-it note. This would be my first prediction for episode 5. Is we will see that.
Okay. And what do you think? How does that fit into the story? What would be your guess?
I don't know. First off, all I know is that the Mets just lost 20-2.
That's tough.
That's insane. I just got a notification on my phone. I've never seen that.
Tough
That's
for the New York Mets.
Pour one out, my friends. Jeez, yeah. Louise.
New York Mets on Twitter just wrote, "It's over."
Well, yeah, that's how you know. That's how you know. Anyway.
All right, what were you saying? So back to B15.
Yeah, so I think we will see it. I think she's been a pretty top billed actress in this show for quite a while. I'd be shocked to see her story arc end with disappearing in a fight. So I think that she'll show back up. I think we will either see it or we'll hear about it, what she was told or what she saw. I don't think it would be even a bad entry into episode 5. Like I said, I think that's a pretty good lead in, because as we're going to hear as we continue to talk more about our characters, but nobody else right now is viable in the TVA. Right.
Yeah.
You've got Renslayer who's kind of captive to Sylvie at the moment. You've got B15 who is probably the only agent on the ground, you know, other than, you know, there's a bunch of the Minutemen who are probably holding her captive, but she could be the one who really starts to set shit ablaze within the actual TVA itself.
Right.
So I would not be shocked to see what she saw as the opening to episode 5. That would be my prediction. I was about to say that's a Ken diction, but that's not a good one.
That could be bad. You know what would be cool? So you have the two characters, you still have Mobius and B15 in play. If I had to put my show running hat on.
Well, time out, Lou. Time out here. We saw a mid-credit scene, and we'll get into this more in a second. We saw a mid-credit scene where Loki's kind of in between dead and alive and wherever the hell he is. He got reset. Now who the fuck knows where he is. Right,
but
Mobius also reset. We don't know where he is either.
I don't think Mobius is dead yet. But what I'm getting at is I think we still have those assets in the story. C20, yes. I think, is presumed dead. And the point of C20 yes. was to tell you that this is all just an inside job, that she had a past life and stuff. I think B15 is going to be the actor that gets you through. Like, she'll be the one that goes through the TVA and basically like finds the details. She will help us understand the details of like what is actually behind this. And I think that is a scene where potentially goes to Renslayer's office and then maybe sees like some documentation with like Kang the Conqueror, something like that. I think they will show B15 in the light of what is the TVA really up to, that, you know, that like would not make sense with Renslayer for right now. I think the Renslayer story is going to be her and Sylvie. They have a lot, obviously, to hash out. We saw episode 4 open up with the scene of Renslayer bringing in Sylvie into the TVA. Where I think Mobius is going to come in is Mobius is going to be the character that the show shows us what happens when the variants come into the TVA. And I think him in this like flux of his life, maybe he does see other variant versions of himself. And perhaps we learn about how somebody becomes into the TVA and then how what was taken from his past life as likely a professional jet skier. So that would be my theory on how these two characters are used for the next couple of episodes.
That's interesting. I honestly think we're going to see Mobius come back as a totally brainwashed, you know, like fresh slate. Yeah, I think he just comes back into the TVA. Well, that's a good point. I think they kind of, I don't know, I guess they go into like this holding room where they then have to like condition them to join the TVA. I don't know. But anyway, we're getting off.
If you remember when Loki came in, he had to sit before Renslayer, right? And when Sylvie
Yeah, but he wasn't going to be an agent, right? He wasn't going to be a hunter. He was just going to be a prisoner.
But
so
you have to assume that Mobius was, I think, has to get reprimanded. He didn't behave well. He didn't go out on good terms with the TVA. He didn't get a
severance. That's true. I don't know, but
there's also no judge. There's no form of power that we know of.
It's very fascinating. And now that we're like talking about the actual like logistics of it, like if everybody's a variant, then what? They just come in and then they get brainwashed? Like, is that the idea? Like, they just get, like, conditioned right when they get... Yeah,
there has to be something behind it, because
we saw, right? Because we saw Sylvie get taken as a kid, and we saw Loki get taken as an adult, but, like, neither of them were going to be conditioned to be TVA agents. They were going to be reset. Although I could make the argument that even if you get reset, that just kind of washes your brain and then you just become a TVA member, right? So maybe it is just everybody they arrest eventually becomes. So I don't know. We're deep into the A's and C's of how the TVA works, and I think Marvel is still trying to figure that out as well. So, you know, maybe we could give them some pointers. Let's talk, because we've got B-15. She kind of disappeared mid-fight. We don't know where she is. Yeah. She's dead, alive, reset, not reset, running the TVA, is the timekeepers, is he who remains. We don't know where B-15 is. What about our two favorite? We're going to save our wow boy and our Loki boy for the end, because I just love them so much. Sylvie and Renslayer. Both alive at the end of the fight. Both still hanging. But Sylvie's got the edge. She's got all of the chips. She's got the spear. She's got Renslayer on her heels. How does that work? I mean, what's next? Because here's the thing, and we've talked about it multiple times, and everybody's kind of, you know, everybody has talked about it. It's not just us, but everybody's talked about how the Renslayer connection to Kang the Conqueror is real, right? And they could have done anything with that character. They could have made it up. They could have called him Lewis. They could have called him Ken. They could have called her Stacy or Susie or whoever, but they called her Renslayer, right? And now we know that the timekeepers are bullshit. The connection is just too strong, it feels, right? For there not to be any Kang involvement. What do you think is up with Renslayer at the current moment?
They did say that, well, I think the point of Renslayer is to open up different storylines. I can't assume Renslayer makes it to other MCU movies. I think Renslayer's train kind of stops at the end of Loki. Like, if we were to start making up characters of, like, who's going to make it out of Loki to be in future titles, I don't think Renslayer makes it. I think Renslayer's purpose was just to kind of show us the TVA and to create the motivation for Kang. And it's likely that Kang's story is going to go across multiple movies and TV shows. Yeah. So, like, this could be, if you were to, like, really rewind, like, for Thanos, like, for Thanos, we first saw him at the end of Avengers, the first one.
Yeah, with his dumb smile, that weird CGI.
He was like, fine, I'll do it myself.
Yeah.
Was that the first time we saw him? So that was 2012. And then we saw him a little bit at Guardians of the Galaxy. We saw him a little bit at, the Gauntlet. So, like, 7 years went by to kind of build up Thanos. It's not crazy to think that this could just be the first drop in the bucket for Kang circa 2028 when, you know, we finally
get... Yeah, and like, I think that's the only way... Yeah, and I think that's the only way, and we've already mentioned it once this episode, but that's the only way that Marvel can compete with itself if they're going to continue to phase in new things, right? The only way they're going to be able to do that is to create a villain that is so overarching to all of the other stories that it transcends phases, right? Like, if phase four is only here to give us the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, that's fine, right? But I would think that the Fantastic Four and the X-Men need to contribute with the Avengers to beat the villain of what created the Fantastic Four and the Avengers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but for Phase 4, would you be satisfied if, let's say, Phase 4 lasts until like 2025, 2026? Okay, so that's 2020 plus 5-6 years.
I would think it'd probably be done in 23, even with the COVID pushback, knowing what we know about how Marvel runs them out.
I was going to get to that. So, yeah, the COVID pushback. The first Avengers, Captain, so Iron Man comes out in 2008. We don't really have the phases there. And then Endgame comes out in 2018. So that's three phases in a decade. If we get one phase that lasts us half a decade and we only get a film that's maybe as big as a Civil War or
Captain America, it's hard to live up to, man.
And what I'm saying is like Civil War and I think Captain America and the Winter Soldier are in one tier and then Infinity War and Endgame are in another tier, just as far as like scope and production and cast go. Would you be content with maybe in the 20s, the 2020s, that we only get one movie that's of the same status of Endgame and Civil War? Civil War and Captain America Winter Soldier. And then the 2030s is when you get the next Avengers 5 made up.
It's hard, Lou, because the answer
like it's gonna
is
slow.
Answer isn't easy because A, you can't do this Endgame Infinity War thing at the end of your story again, right? Because you've done that already. You can't just have a big giant team them up. Everybody you can find gets on screen. You can only do that again. You can only do that again when you're done making Marvel movies. That can be your last Marvel movie, can be another Endgame remake. That's it.
I don't know about that because you still have Secret Wars, which combines.
But how
Avengers.
Are you going to do
But then you just
here's
start
the thing:
over.
How are you just gonna do another big baddie team 'em up movie with everybody you can find goes on screen? It's gonna be the same thing as Endgame. You've done it. That's got to be your level.
I know we're delineating from the sacred timeline. Here,
I know,
but if
this is a Nexus event.
It's
hurry,
next,
Lou, before I
Nexus
kiss
event.
Myself. I'm going to kiss myself. Hurry up.
If you pull Phase 4 until I think Disney's going to be so much delayed on this. So if you pull Phase 4 and that ends up in 2024, 2025, and then Phase 5 starts in 2025 to 2030, Kevin Feige's master plan, we have to assume it's probably going to take these new franchises of Fantastic Four, X-Men, and start pulling them out and getting more serial content out of them. If you don't get the next big Avengers movie till early 2030 with like a Sam Wilson Captain America, then very soon it's going to be time for another Captain America, like a start or like an Iron Man restart with another character because it's going to be almost 30 years since
I know.
Well,
movies
and everyone's going to want to rewatch them.
That's
so
the problem with the question. Well, problem with the question because we know we've got multiple storylines, right? We know that that's always existed. And
Young Avengers still that hasn't been announced.
Right.
When's that gonna
so
happen?
We know Young Avengers is happening. We know Secret Wars is happening. We know
Invasion.
That Julia Louis-Dreyfus is out there, grabbing the Thunderbolts and doing her thing. All of these things exist already, and we know they do, right? We know the Fury series is coming out. We know that Don Cheadle is doing a thing, the Secret Wars on Disney Plus.
Looks like it's crazy.
Whatever, man. It's going to help set up something, I'm sure. And Don Cheadle gets a paycheck, and we can all be happy about that because we all need more Don Cheadle in our lives. We can all agree. I think there are right now, it's fascinating because I think Marvel is taking a very, and we are, we have crossed
big Nexus
the
event.
Sacred timeline. We are in a Nexus event. I think Marvel right now is taking the diarrhea approach, Lou, where they are putting everything they can on the wall and seeing which one gets the most attention. Because all of those storylines, every single one is in play. Thunderbolts are in play. Young Avengers are in play. Kang the Conqueror is in play. I mean, geez Louise, right? Like that's, and don't forget that the entirety of billions and billions and billions of dollars just went into getting the X-Men, right? So we're getting the X-Men. That's in play. They Marvel's first family, the Fantastic Four, they want that movie. That's coming. That's five huge story arcs.
Oh,
and that's not even mentioning the Skrulls. That doesn't even mention the Skrulls.
This would be a good conversation for another topic of phase one through phase three, what it meant for this franchise in just movies. Like, if you wanted to make a story, it had to be a movie. Versus Phase 4 to Phase 6, 4, 5, whatever, that now has this chip of Disney Plus, because it just changes the game entirely. Now you can just, I mean, now we're seeing Black Widow and Shang-Chi coming out, and we're also seeing What If, Loki, WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier. This, I don't think it would not be smart for Marvel to produce a movie every single month and cannibalize on their own box office sales. Bit of business talk for you right there. But you can easily do it on a TV show. You can easily crank out TV show, movie, TV show, movie, and it would be fine.
Oh, yeah.
We still see, like, TV show, movie as very different mediums, because they are. And in the social sphere of having the conversation about them, they still are very different. Like, the movie, you can just throw out Florence Pugh and Scarlett Johansson, and they're movie stars for the next couple of weeks.
I never realized how great Florence Pugh was at everything she does.
She's got a lot of acclaims here. But what I'm getting at is, like, Loki, you kind of have to, like, you announce Richard E. Grant, you announce Sophia DiMartino, and you can't say anything about them. It's a totally different dynamic in a TV show. They have to hush up the entire time and then be ready for their episode to appear that week, and then all of a sudden hit the talking circle and all the YouTube channels and that type of stuff to then say their part. And Richard E. Grant's only going to get it in 2 episodes. Sophia DiMartino only got 4 episodes. That's totally different than a movie. So I think now that the Disney Plus is in play and they have this whole different forum, like, it just offers so much more flexibility here that, you know, maybe X-Men and Fantastic Four take advantage of the TV show format. And Kevin Feige's like, this is the biggest project we've ever ensued or something like that. I don't know. I think the game has changed. Like,
I think you make a good point. I think there's a very fair chance that Marvel steers into becoming a Game of Thrones level TV event.
Yeah.
That they also try and steer into doing the same thing at the box office for the movies. But I think you're right. I think there's a really good chance. Wow, that just blew my mind. That the next big one is a TV event, right? It's this series that is so intertwined, right? It's going on in the background while these movies are getting released. I think that's the path. Sacred timeline.
If Kevin Feige hires Benioff and Weiss, I'm gonna just freak out. Not give those men any more jobs. They had five seasons of Game of Thrones they did a great job in. They had 2 seasons that they literally just smacked with a sack full of bricks, and now they tried the Star Wars movie and they had to get asked to leave from Lucasfilm. They're now doing the Three Body Problem, which is a Chinese novel that was translated to English, where there's some paragraphs that don't make sense because of the translation, and now they're going to make it into a serialized TV shows, and they're also incorporating a Pulitzer Prize story, Overstory by Robert Powers, into a TV show too. These guys have too much work. Please do not give them any Marvel content to touch. I beg you.
No J.J. Abrams, please.
Yeah, we've and also one more thing that I'll point out here, but imagine, like, you're business people at Disney, and you're working with the Marvel team, and you have, out of COVID, you have, like, so phase 1 through phase 3, you had Whedon, Russo brothers, who else? They kind of directed, like, pretty much most of all the good stuff. I mean, Ryan Coogler, but, like, Civil War, Winter Soldier,
they had some good ones.
Infinity War, Endgame, all those were Russo brothers. Whedon produced Ultron, Avengers. But what I'm getting at is that, like, I feel like there's a greater balance.
John Watts is a good one.
Right. And then towards the end, we got who's the Thor Ragnarok guy?
Taika Waititi.
Yeah. So towards the end, I think, of phase 3, and now with the TV shows coming out, I feel like James Gunn with Guardians of the Galaxy, but it seems like there are stronger candidates that they're finding to outsource all of this content in. And it's, I think, better for the show, like, to have someone like Kate Herron, who is bisexual, lead a story about Loki being a gender fluid bisexual, you know, character. It's so much more powerful than having the Russo brothers do it and then having somebody be like, all right, what do we do here to, you know, show this character sexuality there. That's all I'm saying. I think that's another game changer here too, and I think that this is a really good testing period, even given COVID, of what will do better financially. Will you get more subscribers through Disney Plus because of these TV shows, or will the box office continue to keep going with Black Widow, Shang-Chi.
Well, Lou, luckily, we will never know because Disney will never release the streaming numbers, and we will all just be sitting here.
Yeah, like buy Disney stock.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin Feige. Please have another big speech. Okay, sacred timeline. Lou, let's go straight to it. I mean, we've danced around it long enough. Loki and Mobius were both reset.
Wait, we didn't go with Renslayer and Sylvie.
Oh, we just did Renslayer and Sylvie.
Okay. I'm trying to think if enough has been said.
Do you want? Okay. Well, time out. Let's do it.
What do you think of the whole Sylvie being a child thing?
I don't think we said enough on Sylvie. Let's talk a little Sylvie here. Because she is, at this point in the story, is the main protagonist to me.
Yeah, because, I mean, she's the same one in the TVA. So, okay, right. So you're not thinking Renslayer pulls a fast one. You think Kang, saves Renslayer? I don't know. I don't think we see Kang.
No.
And I think I heard a report Kang's not appearing. So how do you think, does Renslayer get out of this? And, maybe Sophie is the one who shows us, the true – someone's got to dig in the TVA. Someone's got to, get in the computer or something like that. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think I think it's – I don't want to sound like General – I forget his name. General Fishface from Star Wars. It's a trap, that guy. What the fuck is that guy's name? I'm totally blanking on it.
I'll look it up.
Just Google General Fishface Star Wars. Renslayer knows.
You're thinking about Admiral Akbar.
Admiral Akbar, yes.
Fish face.
So Akbar. I'm gonna make that my Twitter name, General Fishface. So, I think she knows what's up. She knows that Kang's probably in charge, right? And just trying to set the timeline how he likes it or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. And they kiss and stuff, and that's cool. So But I don't think she's going to get herself into any more trouble. I think she'll give us just enough information to get interested in it. And then it's a trap and get Sylvie in trouble. Loki and Mobius will come back and they'll save her from that trouble. And they'll hopefully Loki and Sylvie will escape it, get back to the sacred timeline. Mobius will probably perish. That continues to be my thought on Mobius as a whole, although he's already perished. So if he perishes twice, that may be overdoing it on the emotions of killing Owen Wilson, I think. So maybe he just ends the series on a jet ski, but there is going to be no, with Falcon and Winter Soldier, there was a conclusion, right? We ended that show. Bucky and Sam are good friends. Don't worry, Anthony Mackie. You're not too good of friends. You're just friends. We get it. You're very close friends.
Can't you see him in the Captain America suit? Someone should dub it over with him being the day a man sleeps in the same bed as another man, but it's remains okay, but heterosexual is the day that America can no longer see two men who love each other as a romance. And not just homosexual, that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, what the fuck are you talking about?
I think he was write that down. What I said was good.
Anyway, but there was a conclusion to that show, right? And there was even a conclusion. There was even a conclusion to WandaVision, right?
Very linear stories.
Right, and then she was doing crazy shit at the end, but there was conclusions to both of those stories. I don't necessarily believe there's going to be a clear conclusion to this story. Yeah. I think there will be a finale type thing where Renslayer is kind of back into, I think she survives. Don't worry. And I think she kind of falls back into the arms of her lover. And Loki and Sylvie are escaping, right? They're back to being variants and they're being hunted or et cetera, whatever that may be. I'm interested to find out how that may be possible. I don't know. I think Sylvie will get, we'll get just enough information out of Renslayer to get us all perked up. But then it's a trap. She'll get cornered. She'll need to be saved. As most, it's a superhero. He's got to save his lady, who's also himself. And then he's going to kiss her, which is also himself. And then they're going to love each other in a weird cosmic way of loving yourself, which causes a nexus event, apparently. Yeah. And who knows? I mean, that is even too much for Pornhub these days. like, that is intense, Loki. Like, chill out, man. You cannot love yourself that hard.
So, like, what is the point of the so I think a possible theory is that they end up Renslayer has some sort of like get out of jail button where she's able to just like walk through a temp pad and then return back to Kang. And I think it's very I think it's very plausible that episode 5 is the last episode we see Renslayer, but I redact my opinion from earlier that she makes it out. And I think in Quantumania, Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, maybe we see a scene where Renslayer helps us be introduced to Kang and is one of those, they're walking around and Kang's just like, not according to the plan. But like, I've got to figure out our way to like, how are we going to be introduced to Kang? And I think Renslayer.
Yeah, I think it's actually kind of interesting. I like my prediction. I think my prediction is pretty solid. I want to work with your prediction because I think there's something there that potentially Sylvie and Loki cameo in Ant-Man and the Wasp because they are prisoners of Kang in that quantum city of Kanapolis. What the hell is it called?
Chronopolis.
Yeah. Chronopolis is a town in North Carolina.
Is basically just this culmination of all the city areas that Kang has conquered. And he's just made his own little bubble here. There's very deep speculation, probably confirmed by Peyton Reed, director of the Ant-Man series, that Chronopolis was shown when they were escaping the quantum realm. There's also some theories that TVA is just in the quantum realm. But it gets to the point of, like, what is now the point of this show? Is the point of this show to, like, free the variants, free the TVA, to bring them down? What happens to Miss Minutes? Like, because if Loki's just stuck, I feel like enough of an incentive against Loki here is if he's just stuck in this realm of, like, doesn't really know what's going on, it's not probably a great look for him. I'm sure he wants to return back to Sylvie, but like, what is the state that Loki probably wants to exist in? I mean, this is also the Loki from 2012 from the Avengers. So yes. I guess if he were to return to the sacred timeline, he probably goes to Norway and hangs out with Thor and Valkyrie and that sort of vibe thing too. Although he doesn't
don't forget Korg
and Korg. Like, hey man, what's up? So like, I don't really know like what the end state of Loki is.
Yeah, here. I think actually, you know, I'm comfortable saying that he and Sylvie go on the run along the timeline, the sacred timeline. I don't even know if the sacred timeline is a real thing. You know, like, I know what's her name, the crazy lady from Doctor Strange, Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
What the hell is her name?
The Ancient One.
The Ancient One. The Ancient One, played by that 40-year-old. I think she mentioned in Endgame, like, the timeline is, like, a real thing, right? And then you can have branch timelines, and that's no good. So that seems to be kind of how we're kind of straddling the lines here, right? That seems to be the rule, is that there is this one timeline. But I think two things could be fair. I think my prediction of – I think both of them are fair, Lou. I got to be honest with you. I think – My thought of he and Sylvie going on the run together away from Kang could be a nice end to the show, right? Kind of set up some future crap, get Kang more out of his comfort zone, maybe make him more of a an at-large villain, that type of thing. Or, and I liked yours a lot, Lou, I think there's a possibility of them being held hostage, right? Being taken prisoner by Kang into not Kanapolis, North Carolina, but Chronopolis inside the quantum realm. And they become a part potentially of any future exploits in that type area. Maybe, Ant-Man, Quantumania, Doctor Strange, Multiverse, et cetera, where they can be, you know, found, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Because let's not forget, Loki's not a main character, right? He's got his TV show. He's not going to get a movie. Right. The movies are still the big ones, right? Like, you get a movie if you are the guy or the gal, right? Like, Wanda is getting a movie, right?
But
Captain America is getting another movie.
Is that over now that we have the TV show?
I don't think it is, man. No.
You don't think but you don't think like I know like there always has to be the lead name in it, but like
Doctor Strange
is gonna have a lot of help in that movie.
Yeah, but the big guns get a movie. But Shang-Chi the big guns, gets a movie. The Eternals Shang-Chi get a big, movie.
But are these big movies, or are these oh, big yeah. guns, or are they just big guns because they've been
guaranteed? Guaranteed. Loki, as much as we love Tom Hiddleston, as much as we love Loki, Thor is the guy.
I agree with you, but do you think we get an appearance of Loki in Love and Thunder? Because technically that Loki's dead, but if he were to use the...
Well, we'll see what happens here. I don't know. It's hard to say. Yeah. I think you'd be better off. I think you would make safer money putting that on him showing up in Ant-Man and Quantumania right now, based on what we know about the TVA at the current moment. Let's get close to the finish line here. I feel like we've been running a triathlon of topics.
Well, one thing, I would be disappointed if the show ends how it started and it continues to go really strong, and then I feel like nothing really comes out of it. You know what I mean? Like, if Doctor Strange and all that stuff is just like okay and it's a good story,
right.
If nothing in the future is like benefits from the seeds yes. that Loki planted, I'll feel a little disappointed. Because
well, that's
I think
why
they did
I
such
think,
a great job with this.
Yeah, and that's why I think this show cannot end with a conclusion, right? Because it's got to be a setup for a bigger punchline.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the whole point. Let's get near the finish line. Like I said earlier, let's do a couple minutes here on Mobius and Loki. They both got reset. Loki in a mid-credit scene wakes up in this weird in-between world with a bunch of other Lokis, Richard E. Grant in his weird vision pajamas,
classic
yellow
King
and green.
Loki.
And then you've got Black Loki, you've got a crocodile Loki, and you've got a kid Loki.
Yeah.
All hanging around. We don't know where Mobius is. You would assume he's in a similar situation, right?
Well, so there's two theories here. It's either Loki's in Loki verse, or wherever he is like variant home, and just there's a bunch of people variants there. And maybe here's one of my theories. I think Loki like walks past variant Mobius, and he's just selling, you know, jet ski rides, and Loki's kind of just like, huh, he's happy now. And that's how like that ends off. But
I don't know, it has a lot of legs. I kind of like the idea of that being just like a variant land.
Yeah. So it's either variant land or Loki verse.
Yeah. I mean, both of which would be pretty wild. It'd be cool to see a million Mobiuses of all of Owen Wilson's old characters from like Night at the Museum.
Yeah.
And they all hang out together. Interesting. I think there's plenty there. There's not a whole lot to say about it because it was just an end credit scene. It was about 8 seconds long. But we do finally see Richard E. Grant, and we know he's only in one more episode.
How?
Right? Didn't you say he was only credited for two?
No, he was in four for like two episodes ago. When I asked the question originally, it was that. For episode three, I looked at IMDb and he was credited for four episodes. And then I asked, like, does that get updated weekly? And the answer has to be yeah, because it keeps going. But Richard E. Grant is obviously the big name out of that group here. There's a couple of polls going around Twitter of like who is really behind the TVA, and the front runners are Kang, obviously the bad guy. But do you think that Richard E. Grant plays the classic King Loki and has made it to the end of time and has seen everything? He's the old wise Loki, and that's really the one behind the TVA. Like, what do you think about that?
I don't think we can do any more. Oh, it's Loki.
But the
I
show
think
is about Loki and his variants.
But I think it's done. I think, you know, the first episode when the climax was Loki, we're going after you. It's Loki. Right. It's you like that. I think you can only do that once.
What if it is really just you and Loki, older Loki?
I would feel annoyed by that.
You don't think that the timekeepers as androids are really just some mischief at the hands of the god of mischief that put them there a long time ago?
I don't like it. I just don't like it. I mean, it's possible. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think it's possible, but I think it's a big waste of my fucking time.
Do you think the timekeepers, or I like to call them on Twitter, the TKers, do you think the TKers are made of vibranium or Stark Tech? Or do you think
Nothing.
Peter Parker
they,
has
They were made
them?
Out of, like, those things are made out of, like, cellophane. They were, like, butter.
Yeah, it was very weird. But yeah, so do you think like Richard E. Grant is like this crocodile and kid Loki, and there's another name for the other Loki that was shown here. Do you think they're just kind of like comic relief here to kind of like get the story into a different hold that like helps Loki get back? Like, what do you think this group of characters is going to be about here?
God, I have no good idea, man. I don't even know. It just is. It's interesting. I mean, it's cool, right? And like that was always my thought about what would happen in episode four would be like we meet more Lokis, right? And we still haven't met President Loki, right? We know that's a thing, right? We've seen it in trailers.
Yeah.
And there are a few others that we haven't seen either. So like it's interesting that like these are the ones, like these are the big guns that they bring out in like mid-credit scene. Obviously Richard E. Grant is a pretty big gun, but I honestly don't know, Lou. I think it's a weird path to take because like you said, we could be in this like Loki land. I think your initial thought of like we're in this variant land where reset folks go who don't become TVA analysts or hunters or whatever. Like I think this is where all the leftovers hang, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, but here we are with this thing of time travel, right? Like, has this already happened, right? Is that how they knew he was going to show up? Or did Mobius show up there right before and say, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Right? Like, yeah. Oh, you know, where are some Lokis? I need some Lokis, right? I don't know. And I don't quite understand how one would escape that realm, but I'm sure there's some sort of Marvel magic that will figure that out. There always is.
Well, I'm sure they escaped Lamentis, so that worked.
Lou, We got a couple of minutes here. We've been all over the map when it comes to Loki.
Running out of steam here.
Running out of steam. Give me your 60-second reaction to number. Okay, give me your 120 seconds on Black Widow coming out in just over a week. We are 9 days away from Black Widow. And we are very close then to Shang-Chi. We just got an updated trailer. We've seen Abomination. We knew he was coming back in She-Hulk, but now we know he's going to be on the big screen also. Just all sorts of crazy stuff in that trailer. It looks like a really fun movie. And I do love how the 10 rings are 10 bracelets because they don't want to put anything on anybody's fingers anymore because they're done with like Infinity Gauntlet shit. So they're like, yeah, just put them on your arm. Just put the 10 rings. Put them on your arm. They're not rings anymore. They are bracelets. Aren't we fucking clever? Look at us go. Next, it's going to be like the 10 necklaces and the 10, I don't know, the 10 Jordans. So, like, give me your 120 seconds.
Oh, man.
Black Widow.
It's a lot of Shang-Chi. Time. How about, yeah, maybe 60. How about we do 60 seconds, 60 seconds, 60 seconds? How about I go, you respond, I respond, you respond.
Bingo. Go ahead.
Okay. Black Widow, I'm hearing some really good reviews coming out of the gate. Seems like a strong performance from Scarlett Johansson and Florence Pugh. I think it's going to pass the test of be renting it at home. I don't know if I'm going to go through the movie route.
Oh. We'll have to see.
I will be back in New York City in that time, so perhaps I do stroll over to the cinema and get myself a big fat popcorn and just sit there and watch it on the big screen. But no, it's getting a lot of good reviews from them as actors. There was some stupid story that I retweeted about where someone was talking about how this passed the theory of gender inclusion. Because
the Bechdel test.
Yeah, like the reason why movies like Black Widow, which is female-driven, and Shang-Chi, which is a celebration of Asian, I'm assuming Chinese culture, are relevant is because when they continue to keep coming out, we don't need to point at them and say, like, it no longer becomes Black Falcon and she becomes Falcon. And, like, just stupid stuff like this where it's like, oh, is Captain Marvel the greatest superhero in power? Oh, I don't know. It's because she's a woman. Are just dumb. I don't like it. I think it's stupid. Hearing good things from Black Widow, I'm excited to see it. I hope Nat comes back because I think it was one of the most enjoyable characters from the original Avengers. So really looking forward to that. And I think a different storyline that goes the prequel route that's not Infinity Gauntlet-esque. And it seems like there is potential that the Florence Pugh character could be like future successor in future movies.
Yeah.
So I did see a little bit about that. I'll pause in Shang-Chi really quick. What are your responses to that?
Yeah, I've seen the same responses to the Black Widow initial reactions have been really, 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 really well received, which is a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to see it in theaters. I'm excited to like go with friends and like make a date to like go to the movies and get dinner beforehand and get drinks and enjoy a film on the big screen. It's very exciting. Get your vaccines, folks, by the way. It'd be very helpful for everybody else if you just fucking did it. So A plus for you. Good effort. So that's exciting. And like you said, Lou, the initial reactions have been really good. I'm excited just because, you know, Black Widow was never one of my favorites. You know, it was one of those characters that's supposed to ground you in the universe, right? She's a human. She's got human ability. She's not crazy alien. She doesn't have like jacked up tech. She just is a superhero, and that's cool. And I liked it. Just wasn't my style. Same thing with Hawkeye, even though that's Jeremy Renner, and that's a whole different topic. But like, it's really cool just to be back in a movie watching a Marvel movie, right? Like, that is going to be so much fun. I'm very excited to do that. And I think we're in good shape to set ourselves up for a return of a Black Widow. I'm not necessarily certain that we get ScarJo back. I think we may be looking at a future of Florence Pugh in the MCU.
Yeah.
And boy, oh boy, am I excited for that.
Big fan. Really good.
I'll pause there.
So the tweet that Ken and I were referencing is by IndieWire. They have over 700,000 followers here. And they write for their review, Black Widow not only passes the Bechdel test and forces men to squeam as it puts them in their place. It's a solid comic book tentpole that excels at Bourne movie, but falls into third act MCU messiness. Read our review here. You know, first off, that sounds like it was written by a man. And you also know that like men... Now that I'm looking at this, there's like tons of information. Like, did Harry Potter pass the Bechdel test? Like, did Shrek pass the Bechdel test? I understand that there has been a history in cinema where anyone besides straight white men have not been shown to the degree that they should have been shown. But you really can identify a man that does not like women in power when they start using terms of psychology here. And pulling, you know, tests out of the woodworks to review a certain piece of art here. So I think what that Twitter account has a very large following says is very stupid. And I'm all for more female-led movies for this to no longer matter. It just becomes a movie. We no longer have to have a test to raise it up. But I guess test is a good thing because it allows us to quantify if the movie is good for diversity, which we probably get the fact that nothing has been good up until recent times because everything's been led by straight white men. Got a bit preachy there. I'll step off the soapbox, but yeah,
it's okay, man.
I think it's silly.
Okay. And it's interesting
like that to get pulled in.
Yeah, no. And I don't disagree with what you're saying in principle. It's just such a fascinating view of it, because when you initially read that headline as somebody who is a proponent of this sounds so stupid and I'm such a white guy. So I'll leave it there, but it's one of those things where when you initially read the headline, you're like, cool, like great inclusion and stuff. And then you're like, this is why people hate it, right? Is because it gets to that point of like bullshit. And it's like, no, it's just a good movie with a cool character that we all love.
Yeah.
And like, why didn't you just say that? Like, you know, I don't know. I think that, and here's the thing, here's what I'll say is I think Lou and I don't do the topic justice. I think Lou and I need support in having that conversation. We'd be happy to have it. I think we could both use, a fair bit of education and knowledge around the whole topic. So if you are somebody who considers yourself to be an expert on the subject, come on down. I think we would all benefit from having somebody like Days back on the show. I mean, they were an incredible discussion just from a different perspective. And it's so funny. Lou and I talk about TV a lot. We talk about movies a lot. We consume a lot. Okay. We're millennials and it's 2021 and we've been locked inside a house for 18 months. Okay. But you know, you consume a lot of media and it's so funny when we talk about shows, because we've come to this point where I believe Lou and I have recognized that the cool thing about these Disney Plus shows has been that we're watching stories from a new perspective. Right, we're watching stories from the perspective of a woman who has dealt with grief in her life. I've never heard that story before.
Yeah,
we're watching stories from the perspective of a Black man who is underappreciated in his own community just because he's Black man. Right, I've never heard that story before. Right, and now we're watching a story of a crazy cosmic man going through time, falling in love with himself, and you know. All sorts of that, bisexual, pansexual, whatever he may be, they may be, as a gender fluid person in the universe. So it's like we've never heard that story either, right? We've watched True Detective with Matthew McConaughey, right? Like that's what we've seen in our lives. I've watched Grey's Anatomy, right? There's a lot of white people in that show, okay? But it's like those are the stories that we've heard. Right. And now we're starting to realize the new stories that we are hearing, be it Captain Marvel, be it Black Widow, be it whatever, be it WandaVision. We're starting to realize these different stories and they are important. And I don't think necessarily all the time we can do the best job talking about them. So if you are somebody who can do a better job talking about them, please do let us know, because we'd love to talk to you about them so that we can also learn, because we, as we've talked about many times, are dummies. Lou, we've gone on for way too long. Okay, I'll give you a quick 15 seconds on Shang-Chi. It's going to be a ton of fun. I'm very excited to see a fun cultural movie in the MCU. We haven't seen that since Black Panther. We haven't seen that in a long, 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 long time. I'm always nervous about these types of things because the trolls come out from below the bridges, and then you realize then, or you get to the movies and you realize that they did not do the culture justice and they just kind of placated an entire culture, right? So it's a heavy balance, but from what I've seen, it looks like it's going to be so much fun, and it looks like it's going to be really, really, really good. And I'm very excited for that. I will admit that I think I'm more excited for that than I am for What If or for Black Widow, but I am excited for all three of those things.
Yeah, final word. I echo a lot of your points here, but I'm also very optimistic on Shang-Chi. Shang-Chi is being directed by Destin Daniel Cretton from All Manners Here. Seems like he is somebody who's of Asian descent. And I think when that's the case and it's not Josh Whedon or the Russo brothers directing this movie, I think we're in good hands here. The cast is primarily Asian oriented. I would probably say the strong majority. I haven't seen any. I'm sure there's maybe some people that are not from an Asian community or heritage or such. I'm trying to find the proper way to speak about this, but yeah, obviously no offense here. But I'm very excited about it. And I think that it has a strong chance of being a home run here. And to your point, you know, there's trolls that always come out, but Black Panther came out and everyone was, you know, Wakanda forever for like a whole year. And that was a cool thing to do, to cross your arms and say that like it was a war chant here. So when moments like that in movies can transcend over the line, the culture line, then I think it becomes fun for everybody. And it's a good story that needs to be told, because then it's no longer an Asian-centered or Chinese-centered movie. It's just a movie. And I'm really pulling for the community here, especially after what has occurred over the summer regarding violence towards Asian Americans. And all the prejudices that have come out because of COVID, I think really pulling for the community here. But I also am also pulling for the community here because I read this article when Crazy Rich Asians was coming out, and there was a lot of excitement about a movie that was being directed by someone from like that part of the world, and also the cast being all of Asian descent, and it was getting big blockbuster movie, and the movie just wasn't great. It wasn't a great adaptation of the book. I read a little bit of the book and, you know, it's a fun story. But being somebody who's white, I really can't justify that much. But I can imagine what it is like to be somebody of a different heritage and not really seeing movies on the big screen and then getting your chance and it doesn't really make it up that well. I'm hoping Shang-Chi kind of does it a little different. As far as Marvel fans go, for the dummies, I think Shang-Chi is going to be a very deep Marvel nerd story. And I think it's going to be very challenging to understand what's been going on here. So I'll just, you know, look to go into it with an open mind, and hope for a good time.
You should keep your eyes open, big guy.
That would be helpful for watching a movie, but I think it's going to be really good. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was in the 90s and critically acclaimed and a good one, just as good as Black Panther was, maybe just a smidge below it because Chadwick Boseman was that good. So that's my part.
Absolutely.
It's my piece.
All right. Let's do a quick schedule look ahead, folks. Next week, we will have a recap of Loki episode 5. And then the following week, I want to promise a double feature of reactions to Black Widow and a Loki.
Might need to do two podcasts.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think we might have a double feature the week of the 14th, but it all depends on when folks can get to the theater. I mean, I'm going on opening night, Lou. I think it's one of those things that I've been dying to do.
You're a big movie guy.
Oh, yeah. Just excited to get back there, sit in my nice recliner, big bucket of popcorn, probably get a nice Black Widow released bucket of popcorn that I can put with my Rise of Skywalker bucket of popcorn that I have since turned into a golf club cleaning bucket because I don't want to be reminded of that movie. I'm good.
That was tough.
So keep your heads up, folks. We may be seeing you a lot in the next coming weeks. After Loki is done on the 14th, then What If comes out, and that's where Lou and I are just going to be lost, okay? Because we don't even know what was. So What If is going to be bananas, and we're excited to talk about that as well. So we got a packed schedule for the summer coming up. We don't take summer vacation here on the MCU for Dummies, okay? We are dummies through and through, which also means that we don't go on vacation because dummies – don't do vacation. Lou, any parting words? Anything to plug? Where can they follow us? Where can they see all of our good stuff?
Yeah, go follow us at MCU for Dummies on Twitter. We've been pretty active. All podcast videos, little clips, if you're up to this point of the conversation, are all posted on that Twitter site. So you can find all that stuff and interact with us as you wish.
Awesome. I consider myself to be quite a hilarious person at most times of my life, but Lou is a fucking nut job on Twitter, and it's a good follow, I promise.
I have
LOL'd multiple times in IRL, if you will. I have LOL IRL. Lol Earl. That's what I like to say. All right, folks, let's get out of here. This has been the MCU for Dummies. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate it. I'm Dummy Number 1, Ken. That is Dummy Number 2, Lou. And we will see you next week with an Episode 5 recap of Loki.
Yeah. Peace out, Cub Scout.